You've got the Interdominion coming up, and I know the World Driving Championships are going to be taking part at Wagga, Bathurst, Newcastle, Penrith, Goulburn and Menangle. You're representing New Zealand. We're going to see a bit of you in New South Wales.
Yeah, that's right. We'll get home from Melbourne and then pack the bags and head to Sydney for a couple of weeks for that. So it's the last one I did was in America, and it was, you know, a lifetime experience that you never forget. You meet so many wonderful people, and obviously having 10 different drivers from 10 different countries across the world is a real eye-opener, and it's, they're all great to chat to, and, you know, it's something you really look forward to. So it'll be exciting to get to Sydney for that and, you know, compete against the best in the world and head to a few of those tracks. I've been to a couple, but I haven't been to most of them, and go do better with them and see how we go. But it's just an experience that, you know, off the track as well is just a great experience and something you cherish for the rest of your life.
Yep, we'll be talking more about that, the World Driving Championships and, of course, the Inter-Dominion. Hey, Dexter, thanks for joining us this morning on Sky Sports Radio. We can't wait. It'll be at 9.30 on Saturday night, a big coverage here on Sky Sports Radio and on the telly Sky Racing 1, where I think they're miking you up before the race and during the race.
Yeah, that's right. Gavin Lang did it last week and they've asked me to do it this week. So, I guess, yeah, we're getting a few questions thrown at me around at the start, but it's, you know, it's good for the public to probably get a look in and see what we get up to the start and better get an eye on the other horses around the start as well, so that'll be good.
Good on you, Dexter. Thanks for your time. Good luck Saturday night.
Yep, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Dexter Dunn, the driver of Chris and Me in the Hunter Cup. Now, here's the first at Hattrick. The favourite six, Glads, are popping.
Saturday night, round comes the bunny, and we're about to set to jump in the first. Racing, Glads are popping a fair break. Good Time Texan missed it by 5 or 6. Corborn Birds come out well here today with Archie's Plan beside it. Glads are popping, pushing forward. Homebush Rocco goes ahead of it. Chinese Star trying to head across to the rail. Further back to Botany Chris, Princess Novak, Good Time Texan on the corner. Corborn Bird, it's flown out in front here from Homebush Rocco, and Glads are popping, and Corborn Bird is in. Glads are popping got up for second. Fair run after all that, I'd say. Homebush Rocco third, then Chinese Star. Further back in the race then, we had Archie's Plan after a good beginning. Botany Chris was well back when they crossed. A Good Time Texan and Princess Novak back in that heap as well.
Number 3, Corborn Bird gets the money, 580 and 130. A second, number 6, Glads are popping, $2. And 2, Homebush Rocco at $2.10. 3, 6 and 2 on the first race at Hattrick. And just before we wrap up Racing HQ, in amongst all the sadness that we spoke about this morning, some news from the Godolphin stable. Furnaces barrier trialled yesterday and did it perfectly. They led yesterday in the trial, but John O'Shea said, "I'd prefer to take a set." They're expected to have 4 runners in the Lonro Plate on Saturday week. Furnaces, Hapnick, Calverite and E-Grain are going to be lining up there. 4 of them in the Lonro Plate, and they'll have a couple also in the Silver Slipper, including Holler. And tonight, Sam Pia is heading down to Melbourne to run in the Blue Diamond Prelude with Bantam. And by the way, horses from Godolphin heading to Melbourne, Sarajevo is going to Melbourne to line up in the Autumn Stakes there at Caulfield on Saturday week. Some news there out of Godolphin. Large 2-year-old numbers we know, and Saturday week in the Lonro, they'll have 4 of them, including Furnaces. That's it for Racing HQ. Hope you in some way enjoyed the program with the stories of Haylist and the tragedy of Burnstone, the 2-year-old. After the break, it's Tab Sports Talk.
Big moments are made easy with a graduate of this year's Magic Millions Perth Yearling Sale from February 17. An outstanding selection of yearlings by a wide range of local and interstate sires. From a sale that has produced Group 1 stars Magnificio and Moment of Change, all yearlings offered are eligible for the $11.19 million Magic Millions Race Series. Find racing's next superstar at the Perth Yearling Sale February 17 and 18. For more information and to view the online catalogue, visit magicmillions.com.au.
Sky Sports Radio has harness racing covered every step of the way from On the Pace Tuesday at 10:30.
Now, Jeff, there was another run in between those two wins. You found the front, and after that, a nightmare unfolded.
We weren't going to talk about that.
It's an awful feeling.
To previews daily from 11 a.m. and live trackside updates. You got me wrapped up around your feet. Sky Sports Radio leads the harness racing way 7 days a week.
Tab Saddle Up Sundays. Visit some of our most exciting regional destinations.
Orange's turn to saddle up is on Sunday, February 15. Racing Orange's Family Fun Day will be a fantastic day out for everyone. Free entertainment includes jumping castles, pony rides, face painting, plus fashions on the field and more. Sky Sports Radio and Sky Racing World have the mounting yard covered at Orange, Sunday, February 15.
For more on Tab Saddle Up Sundays, visit gocountryracing.com.au.
On Sky Sports Radio, your racing and sports leader, it's time for Tab Sports Talk.
What about an eagle? What about an albatross?
Adam Scott, you are a star.
Bringing you the latest in local and international sports.
And a very good morning, everyone. It is 5 minutes past 10, Tab Sports Talk with Sean Cosgrove and with Trent Langscale as well from tab.com.au. Morning, Trent. How are you?
Going well. And yourself, Cosy?
Not too bad at all, thank you. We've got a big day coming up. Now, the Asian Cup, I mean, people are still celebrating over that. They're still wrapped up. It was a magnificent effort by the Socceroos.
It was, and we had those nervous moments just before the end of normal time when South Korea equalised, but we managed to get there in the end in extra time thanks to James Troisi. And I guess we'll talk about the magnitude of the event. It has been a couple of days since the final, but we were lucky enough to have Mark Guest on Sunday. He was at the ground, but we have Ian Strachan with us. He is the editor of Goal.com, one of the premier websites for soccer/football in the country. Ian, good morning to you.
Good morning, gents. How are you?
Going well, and yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Now, what's the reaction been like around the world to this win by Australia in the Asian Cup? Does it make news in those countries who didn't compete, Ian?
Yeah, look, we heard a little bit about it in some of the other outlets in the world. I think most people's reference point for Australia and the Socceroos elsewhere in the world was their World Cup performance, which was deemed to be valiant, but obviously ultimately unsuccessful. So I think maybe beating the likes of South Korea in the final will probably make a few people sit up and take notice and doff their cap to that achievement, because they've certainly come on leaps and bounds in the last year.
Are we regarded, I mean, how do other countries regard us? Are we regarded as minnows in the competition, or are we gradually working up that pecking order?
Well, I mean, the attitude to Australia is conditioned by its appearances in World Cup finals. So I think a lot of people, you know, just like they do here in Australia, a lot of people elsewhere in the world still remember the 2006 World Cup when they were unlucky to go out to Italy. And they recognise some of those star names from that generation. Obviously, Tim Cahill still very famous around the world, but I think this will be the beginning of more people being recognised. I mean, one of the quirks of this tournament, as far as, say, people in the UK are concerned, for example, is that by far Australia's standout or star player, Massimo Luongo, is someone who's, you know, doesn't have a very high profile there at all, playing with Swindon in League One. But I would think that, certainly in his case, is set to change, and I would think over the next, you know, the next 4 years leading up to the next World Cup, then some of the other Socceroos who've proven themselves to be good enough to make a difference will slowly start to gain the kind of profile that some of their predecessors had.
Well, that seemed to be the best part about the tournament, Ian, is that, of course, we've had Tim Cahill and Bresciano, we've had Harry Kewell and Viduka in the past, but now there's that rejuvenation that Ange Postecoglou did bring in over the last 12 months, and that bore fruit, particularly with the performance of Massimo Luongo and a couple of the other youngsters.
Yeah, one of the other guys that's really impressed people in this tournament has been Trent Sainsbury. I think we were all very confident in what Matthew Sporanovic could do. I mean, he was excellent in difficult circumstances at the World Cup, but that centre-back position has been a real issue. Lucas Neal, obviously, you know, isn't getting a look in anymore, doesn't have a club, although I think he is still yet to call time formally on his international career. There was certainly a void to be filled there. Ange hoped that Curtis Good would be the man to do that, but of course he got injured before the World Cup and is still working his way back to fitness. Reece Williams is another promising, still relatively young centre-back at Middlesbrough, but he's recently suffered a recurrence of the Achilles problem, which ruined his chances of a World Cup call-up. So to have Trent Sainsbury move ahead of Alex Wilkinson in the pecking order and really show what he can do in this tournament was, I think, a big bright spot for the Socceroos, because he was very impressive.
And along with the youngsters, also the abundance of players that had come from the A-League as well. We'd seen with the previous couple of coaches that the league was sort of frowned upon from a national point of view, but it just continues the importance of the league now in its 10th season. It just continues to grow from strength to strength.
Yeah, it's great to see not only the players that have either come from the A-League and, you know, some of the boys have moved overseas recently that have been in this squad. Some of them are still in the A-League, but not only the players, but, of course, the coach as well. You know, Ange Postecoglou, Australian-born and bred, and, well, I think actually he was born in Athens, but, you know, in a footballing sense, born and bred in Australian football, made his name as a player and a coach with South Melbourne in the National Soccer League, made his name again with Brisbane Roar in the A-League, and now... he's been promoted to the top job. He's shown what Australian coaches and Australian players grown here in the A-League can do. So, you know, it'll be a big boon for the domestic competition as well.
Ian, it's been interesting to see the background of some of the guys coming from, and you look and think, Palm Beach? How would Palm Beach produce such good football players, soccer players? They had a couple of the guys go through.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the clubs, if you look back at the heritage of where some of the players have come from, the Central Coast Mariners, you know, as one of the smaller A-League teams, have certainly punched above their weight in this one, producing the captain, Miller Jednak, producing Sainsbury, producing Wilkinson, who contributed, Matty Ryan, the goalkeeper. Yeah, it's great to see a team with such small resources and such a relatively low profile forming the backbone of a title-winning international squad. It's a great story there.
Ian, we mentioned at the start that you are the editor of Goal.com and you produce plenty of pieces on that website. You did write a piece yesterday after the announcement about Tim Cahill leaving to play or going from Major League Soccer to the Chinese Super League. How big of a surprise was the announcement yesterday and what could the A-League clubs have done to perhaps sign him?
I don't necessarily know if it was a surprise. I think all bets were off as to where he would go. We really didn't know what his next decision would be. Since his impressive performance at the World Cup, I think maybe that put him back on the map, so to speak, as the rest of the world was concerned. He was linked with a return to the Premier League. He's revealed that David Moyes, his former manager at Everton, wanted to take him to Real Sociedad, where Moyes is now the manager in La Liga. We've sort of seen stories about United Arab Emirates clubs being linked with him, ironically or coincidentally, just before Australia's semi-final against the UAE. So that may have been an attempt at deception or subterfuge more than anything else. China, it seems that, you know, his performance in the quarterfinal is what sealed the deal there, is what made them sit up and take notice of what he was capable of. In terms of the A-League, I think there were perhaps only two clubs who ever had a realistic chance of getting him in terms of resources, and that, in my opinion, would be Sydney FC or Melbourne City. Some of the stories that have emerged today seem to suggest that Sydney FC, despite having, as we know, been able to lure Del Piero as a very well-paid marquee, couldn't stretch their wage bill to what Cahill wanted. Now, the man himself told Fox Sports yesterday that any A-League offers weren't necessarily about the money for him. He said that any A-League offers he received, and he said there weren't any concrete offers in the last 2 months, but any informal proposals he received didn't appeal to his desire to contribute to the grassroots of football in Australia and to have a project he could work with. The man's very passionate about his academies that he's developing to bring young players through and, as he sees it, to give back to the game in Australia. I spoke to him one-on-one before the tournament, and that was a big subject of his conversation with me and many other journalists. So it seems that the chance to make an impact on Chinese football and to leave a legacy on Chinese football, as well as, you know, earning himself the remuneration that he deserves for his talent, is probably the biggest draw card there. So I look at Melbourne City, who have got Josh Kennedy as their Australian domestic marquee. He's a chance to make his debut against Melbourne Victory on Saturday. And it, I mean, in my opinion, as long as they could convince their paymasters in the Middle East that it was a worthwhile investment, then they were certainly the club best placed to try and present him with a package to lure him to Australia, not only in terms of his wages, but in terms of what he could do working with academies and working with local kids. So possibly an opportunity missed. It remains to be seen whether or not Cahill genuinely was interested in coming back and playing in the A-League, but I think it's certainly disappointing for local fans that they won't be seeing him week in, week out.
Ian, when you come down to the dollars and what China would have offered him, would it have been substantially more than anyone else, do you think?
The reported figure in the Fairfax press this morning is approximately 10 million Australian a year is the maximum he may be earning. Now, that sounds like a lot in a lump sum like that. It works out at closer to 20,000 Australian dollars a week, which, as I'm sure you're aware, is a lot of money. But in the grand scheme of the football, of world football, it's actually not that much. If he had gone back to the Premier League, he would be looking at least £20,000 a week, probably more if he could wring it out of a gullible club desperate for a goal scorer. So It's big money for Australian clubs if that is what he's being paid, and it would price the vast majority of them out of the market. But, you know, given how much passion he has for Australian football, given how he speaks so frequently and publicly about giving back to Australian football, and if he's true to his word that it wasn't about the money, then it seems to me that the opportunity missed lies in clubs' failure to appeal to that philanthropic aspect of his you know, dwindling or is the twilight of his playing career. You know, he wanted to give back to the game, and if people didn't seize upon that aspect and make enough of a big deal about it, that may be where the A-League's failure to lure him back lies.
With the Australian football, Ian, we've got basically the halfway mark of the A-League season now, the Asian Cup's over. What have surprised you in the first half of the season? What are you looking forward to in the run-up to the finals?
Well, I think the biggest surprise surely has been the failure of Western Sydney Wanderers and Brisbane Roar to come anywhere near to the standards that they set last season. And, I mean, nobody at all would have predicted the Wanderers still being winless beyond the halfway mark of the season. That really is an extraordinary fall from grace for them in a domestic sense. There's been a lot of turnover of players there. So Tony Popovich has let quite a few go. Some of them that he only signed very recently. He's brought in two Japanese players of very good pedigree. So hopefully they can have an upturn in fortunes in the second half of the season. And I guess from a Victorian perspective, the club we're keeping our eye on here is City, who, as I said, will have Josh Kennedy for the second half of the season. They've got Robbie Coren, a very experienced former Premier League player, available to them now after he missed most of the first half of the season. And they've also done some good business elsewhere in this window. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep pace with the league leaders, Glory, and the sort of head of the chasing pack, Victory and Adelaide, who have been very impressive so far.
And hopefully the Newcastle Jets and the Central Coast Mariners will return to the news for all the right reasons as well. Just hasn't been a good season for them in different perspectives.
Yeah, one small piece of good news for the Mariners this morning is that they've announced a partnership with Everton, who are, you know, as you know, one of the big clubs in the Premier League, and that will hopefully see some players moving in both directions on a loan basis, an opportunity for some youngsters to perhaps go over there and vice versa. So, a good piece of news for the Mariners this morning. As for the Jets, well, I think we're all sort of watching that, you know, with our fingers over our eyes, waiting to see what on earth happens next and where that saga turns. So, you know, the people you've got to feel for in that one are the Jets fans who, as we saw, you know, the people of Newcastle love football, turned out in force for the semi-final against the UAE in the Asian Cup, and they deserve whatever the rights and wrongs of the various parties that have been at fault in this saga, they deserve a stable club that gives the team the best chance to perform on the field. So hopefully there's a positive resolution there, but I mean, at this stage, everything is up in the air and it still seems a long way off that everything is settled down and that we can move forward positively there.
Ian, just finally, Ange Postecoglou's stocks have got to have risen because he bit the bullet and he took them on, really, didn't he?
What was that? Sorry, mate, I didn't catch that.
Ange Postecoglou's stocks have got to have risen because he really took the part and said, I want you to win, I want you to win with a bit of dash, just have a real crack. And his standing would have had to have improved enormously.
Yeah, hugely impressive achievement from him to win with an international team playing progressive, positive football. It's very difficult as an international coach to completely change the mindset of a squad and to sort of overhaul their tactics and systems. It's much easier to take a more defensive approach, to try and just keep things tight, not concede goals, which is what we saw South Korea's coach Ole Stielicke do when he came into their job. They were leaking goals in the World Cup, and he said, okay, safety first, let's keep it tight. They didn't concede until the final, but ultimately they didn't win either. So the courage that Ange had to get his players playing the right kind of football, you know, that was the hard way of doing things, and it really did pay off because that's what made the difference in the end. So he'll be hugely thought of now. And to be honest, I can't imagine what he can do wrong. I mean, other than fail to qualify for Russia 2018, then you know, he'll be pretty safely ensconced in his position as a great of the Australian game now.
Terrific, Ian. Appreciate your time this morning. It's been great, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks a lot, Ian. And a good wrap there, Trent.
Yes, goal.com to check out all the Premier news in regards to football, whether it be in Australia or obviously the Premier League's the big code, and then all the others around Europe and the world. Just on the A-League, a quick recap of the matches being played this weekend for Round 16. Begins Friday night at Hunter Stadium, where Newcastle are $4.25 outsiders at home to Brisbane. Saturday, the 5 o'clock match in Gosford. Central Coast, $4.25 outsiders at home to Adelaide United. You have the Melbourne Derby, 7 7:30 on Saturday night, where Victory are $2.05 favourites. 9:30 kickoff on Saturday night, Sydney FC are $3.40 outsiders away to Perth Glory. And then Sunday, 5 o'clock at Penrith, not Pertec Stadium in Parramatta, Western Sydney still yet to break the drought there, $2.45 favourites at home to Wellington at $2.75. So that's round 16 of the A-League, available with tab.com.au.
Well, right now it is 20 past 10, Sky Sports Radio. They're about to load race 2 at Hattrick. Corbourne Wally, number 1, 620. 2 Clearly Magic, 390. 3 Wicked Tycoon, 740. 4 Portobello Patsy, $12. 5 Cherie Cherie, 610. Number 6 Roger Red, $20. 7 Davy Boy Scott, 360 and 140 favourite. And number 8 Rangers Waltz, 2340. Reserves not required. The Black to favourite, 7 Davy Boy Scott, 360, 140. Let's go then out of Hattrick.
Portobello Patsy in the blue. Roger Red the green and Rangers Waltz the pink. Lined and ready the second, all clear, wave through. Rayuti rolls the lure, round it comes. Let's see how this favourite jumps today. Clearly Magic the set. Racing, Clearly Magic slow along with Corbourne Wally. Getting out nicely, Wicked Tycoon and Portobello Patsy, and going forward was Davy Boy Scott with Cherie Cherie in the mix as well. That'd be fine. Corbourne Wally's got a lovely run through on the inside here. Back in the piece, we've got Cherie Cherie's been shuffled with Rangers Waltz and Clearly Magic. Up they come. Corbourne Wally keeps coming the rail from Davy Boy Scott. Corbourne Wally, Davy Boy Scott, Wicked Tycoon third. Fourth to go by was Cherie Cherie. Further back then to Clearly Magic. Roger Red back with that Rangers Waltz, and Portobello Patsy dropped out to last.
It'll be 1-7-3 over the line there. Number 1 Corbourne Wally will pay $6.20 and $1.70. 7 Davy Boy Scott will pay $1.50, and number 3 Wicked Tycoon will pay $3.50 for the place. So 1-7-3 over the line, race 2 there at Hattrick. Our next event will be the third a little later on. It is 21 past 10 at Sky Sports Radio.
If greyhound racing is your favourite, Sky Sports Radio never loses sight of the lure. Start the week with Mark Duclos and Going Greyhounds every Monday at 10:30.
This greyhound has got very good early pace, ran 29.50 on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, she was a really good run, and I think she was the second fastest qualifier.
There's previews from 11 each morning and trackside updates from meetings around the state. Sky Sports Radio, your greyhound leader 7 days a week.
Weekends start on Thursdays at Churchill Sports Bar in Kingsford. Happy hour schooners are just $4.50 between 5 and 6 every Thursday and Friday night, and Saturday arvos from 12 till 2. There's double header poker every Friday night. Game 1, Rego from 8 with $1,000 guaranteed. Game 2, Rego 11 p.m. with free entry and $500 guaranteed. Churchill's members get even more, like free weekend cash draws. Join at the bar or on churchillsbar.com.au. See you this weekend at Churchill's at the Kingsford Roundabout.
Heading into the world-famous Sydney Autumn Carnival, Sky Sports Radio is your racing leader.
I got a drink in my hand and my homies do too. The vibe is in the air, I feel it. I love my life.
We love it when we back a winner.
I've got number 13, Serenade, possibly leading here. And even though she was outpaced on debut of Gosper, she did show natural pace to win her trial, so I expect her to go forward.
Serenade well clear from I'm Not Sure, and Serenade bolts in by 5 lengths. So I'm Not Sure, Echo Queen third.
13 Serenade, Renton Abdullah, $15.50 and $3.
Paul Joyce, one of the late male experts that loves tipping winners on Sky Sports Radio.
On Sky Sports Radio, this is Tab Sports Talk.
Can you believe it? It is 23 past 10. Now, the numbers 1-7-3, they are official. The second event at Hattrick, 1-7-3, those numbers there are official.
And, Cozzy, we are joined on the line by Brooke Knight, who is the manager of the Adelaide Bite in the Australian Baseball League, and they will be hosting the Australian Baseball League Championship Series starting Friday night at Norwood Oval in Adelaide, and we'll be able to see that on ESPN locally. So, Brooke, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Good to have you on. Brooke, just looking ahead at what's happened in the season so far, you had the best record at 32-16, so that's enabled you to have the home field in the best of three series. And looking ahead to a team you previously managed in the Perth Heat beginning on Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. You know, I know those guys pretty intimately on and off the field, and that's a good side. They're strong. They know how to win. And they're going to come in here doing what they can to take us down. So you know, our boys are ready. We're chomping at the bit. We've had to wait a little bit with the week off and since we had the bye. So, you know, our guys will be ready to go on Friday.
Yes, well, Perth have had a pretty good record in the Australian Baseball League since it sort of was reinvigorated the competition. They've won three of the four Claxton Shields with the Canberra Cavalry winning one a couple of seasons ago. Just for this season, Brooke, how have you gone against the Perth Heat in the regular season?
You know, I think we won 3 out of 8 with them, so almost split it, lost a couple of close ball games. It's an evenly matched fight this weekend. It's going to come down to one swing, you know, one play. That's just the way it's going to be. Really surprised if somebody ran off with it, because both these teams are hungry and they're both talented.
And it looks, just seeing from the pictures on the Australian Baseball League website and also yourselves through your Twitter account, that looks like it's going to be a capacity house at Norwood Oval. They'll be making plenty of noise on Friday night.
Yeah, the tickets are going quick. I mean, and they have some left, but the sales have been really, really strong. And I mean, I don't think you're going to find a better environment for baseball in Australia as far as that goes. And Norwood's such a neat place to watch a game. They've improved the lighting as well recently. So, you know, it's going to be a great atmosphere. I can't wait.
Brooke, we've seen over recent and past years, the focus has been on some of the juniors coming through in Australia, and talent scouts were often out here searching for them and looking. Is that focus still as strong?
It is. In fact, it's improved since the 90s and even from 5 or 10 years ago. I mean, most major league teams are represented in Australia. They've got the national tournament over in Blacktown in early January. You've got an academy for 5 or 6 weeks as well. There are quite a few young Australians playing minor league and affiliated baseball in the States. You've probably got 8 to 9 big leaguers as it is, which those guys are, you know, the minimum wage in the big leagues in the U.S. is around $500,000 at this point. And then you've probably got 60 to 80 minor leaguers that are currently affiliated, that are Australian kids, and that continues to be the case. The sport continues to grow and develop.
Well, we've seen that last year when we had the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Arizona Diamondbacks. They came out here to actually open the season in Sydney, just a couple of games. But we have a lot of American sport. It seems to grow in popularity from a betting point of view, Brooke. But just for yourself, with the people that follow the baseball, are there some prospects that we should be looking forward to seeing over the next weekend in regards to the Australian Baseball League Championship Series?
You know, between our club and Perth, you know, the rookie of the year, who's a good young player, is probably the rookie of the year. We've got a great player as well, like Corey Lyon. It's either going to be him or a kid named Jordan McDonald, who's with Perth. Jordan's put up probably slightly better numbers than Corey. Corey tends to be more versatile. Corey will be playing left field for us. He's originally from Brisbane, and then we picked him up in the draft this last year. So he's been with us all season. And then young Jordan McDonald is a Perth boy who just got back from college this last year. And he's walked right back into the ABL with 3 years of college experience and had a really nice season. So those are probably your two young guys. We've got an arm as well who did play affiliated baseball and may have another chance. He continues to improve. He's a left-handed pitcher named Wilson Lee. He very well will probably get some time on the mound this weekend. So there are some young, talented Australians that will be playing this weekend, yes.
And the good thing about the scouts, as Cozzy asked about before, is that there'll be plenty of exposure in this championship series, because not only is it being shown locally on ESPN, but it'll be beamed into Asia on Fox Sports and in the States itself on the MLB Network. So they'll get plenty of chances to impress over this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, the coverage is huge, actually, for the series. It ends up being really, really great exposure. And you are going to have some scouts that... they basically handle Australia and then the Asian countries, Korea, Taiwan, China, Japan. That's called a Pacific Rim geographical location. So there will be, and most of those guys are based out of Australia. So there will be quite a few of those guys, I would imagine, at the series this weekend.
And you'll look forward to breaking the drought. It's been over 30 years since Adelaide's won a baseball title in whichever incarnation of the Australian Baseball League it's been.
Yeah, I believe 1980 was the last time. So we... most of these guys weren't alive when that last championship went down. So we've only got, in fact, Darren Fidge, who's retiring this year, would be the only guy that was alive last time South Australia won a championship. So that's something we really want to bring home.
There ought to be some celebrations. If you do, they'll tear the place down.
Well, they're ready to do that, so they know what it takes. I mean, we got to get the first out, and we'll go from there.
All right, good on you, Brooke. Great to catch up this morning. Appreciate your time, and good luck.
Appreciate it. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks a lot. It'll be a big game.
It will be, Cody. Yes, the best of three series hosted at the Norwood Oval beginning Friday night. It's 7:30 our time, so 7 o'clock in Adelaide. And we are betting on the